Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Hope you all made it through Monday. Let's start with some calls. Trains, buses, light rails. Our listeners tell us that their public transportation options leave a lot to be desired.
Hi, this is Jessica calling from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Nico from Jacksonville, Florida.
Lonnie Van Duser, Bend, Oregon.
Paul from Portland.
Janice, I'm calling from Nantucket, Massachusetts. I wish I could use public transportation. It's very limited where I live. If I were to take a bus, I would have to walk transfer, and it would take me over 45 minutes to travel a distance of a mile and a quarter.
In the New York City metropolitan area, everyone, every day, is encouraged to take public transportation. Here's the catch. It's so underfunded and overburdened that it's collapsing.
The transportation in Jacksonville is absolutely awful. We only have a bus system that doesn't have very many, if any at all, cross-town routes, so the cost of getting around skyrockets.
I just got off the bus going into work. I gave away my car 18 years ago, back when I was still living in Ohio, to get away from gasoline. They do a pretty good job here in Portland, but of course, expansion and things like that is always pretty slow. It's demonstrative of how hard it is to get people in from all the suburbs.
I don't use public transportation. I live in a rural area and have to drive my car every day. Public transportation in our city is pretty abysmal.
Honestly, it's just overall a travesty.
Simply isn't a good fit.
What are we supposed to do?
Well, we've heard you, and some of those same issues are on the minds of Georgians outside of Atlanta today. That's where voters will decide whether to add a train line from Atlanta through Gwinnett County, which is just north of the city. The area is notorious for gridlock traffic and sprawling highways, and a connection to the Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority, or MARTA, could help the logjam. But some say the referendum won't pass, and one reason for that has a lot to do with race. It's an Atlanta public transportation story, but it has echoes across the country and throughout our history. King Williams is with me. He's the director of The Atlanta Way, a documentary about gentrification. King, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
King, what's the situation today when it comes to traffic and getting from Gwinnett County to Atlanta?
So traffic in Gwinnett County is almost impossible. For any part of the Gwinnett County, it takes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour to get from point A to point B, and that's not including getting into Atlanta for a lot of people, which is usually a minimum 45-minute commute.
How are people commuting generally?
It's 95% by car. And then the few that are, the other 5%, are by buses, which is the Gwinnett County bus service, which is quite limited and does not work on weekends or holidays.
When you say it's limited, what does that mean? Like if I'm just thinking we have 24-hour public transportation in New York. It's falling apart, but it's there. What does it look like? Like what does it look like in Atlanta?
The transit service for people in Gwinnett is almost non-existent. The bus service really has really limited hours for off-peak hours, meaning that if you were to catch the bus, let's say, after 9 or 10 a.m. or after 6 p.m., you essentially don't have a bus. You either have to walk or get someone to pick you up or use Uber. And for a county that's very large, for a county that's probably the size of Queens and Brooklyn combined, that's a lot of space to cover.
Tell me about Gwinnett County. Who lives there?
So Gwinnett County is our most diverse county in Georgia. It's one of the most diverse counties in the Southeast. It's a majority-minority county, and it's rare in Georgia because it's one of the few that has no white majority. And so for the last 10 or so years, it's caused a bit of issue because it's minority of both Latinos, Asians, and African-Americans, with still a sizable population of whites who live in the county.
Voters are going to the polls today, King. What is this referendum, and how do you think this will impact what's happening?
This referendum could be a game changer for not only regional mobility, but economic mobility. And it's been interesting to see how many people are still kind of on the fence as to what this vote could do for them and what could it do for their lives.
When you say on the fence, who's on the fence about what?
So right now, it's been unfortunately by demographic lines where there's a lot of people who are typically older and typically more conservative in their viewpoints who feel as if transit is not the option for solving traffic, and transit can't alleviate traffic. It can only be more roads or bridges.
Is it really about solving traffic, or is it about getting people who can't afford cars? That's what I'm wondering. Because driving isn't cheap, right?
No, driving is not cheap, especially in Georgia. We have one of the highest costs associated with owning a vehicle and vehicle ownership, but it's both. And for some people, there are a lot of people in Gwinnett County who do not have a car. And then there are a lot of people who don't have access to better jobs because they're stuck in traffic or they can't get within their own county, much less to the economic center of our state, which is the city of Atlanta.
I want to talk a little bit about the history here, because none of these things happen in a vacuum. Similar measures to expand the system were considered in 1970 and 1990, and there was a pretty intense racist reaction to that, or should I say a backlash to that. Can you give us a sense of what that was like, King?
Right. In the 1970 and the 1990 vote, the 1970 vote was significant because this was within 10 years of the last biggest phase of white people living in Atlanta and actually moving into the suburbs of Gwinnett County. And so the vote in 1970 is more a reflection of white flight and backlash to potential black people moving into their neighborhoods. And then the vote in 1990 was another vote that was similar in scope, but the change in that tone was that now poor black people will move into Gwinnett County versus just all black people. And so for both of those years, it really, really held back economic growth for the entire region, but it helped Gwinnett County become an isolated island into itself.
What's changed since then, King?
Well, what's changed since then is that Gwinnett County has grown since 1990 by 50%. It's going to grow within the next 15 to 20 years by another 50% that we estimate, if not higher. And in doing that, the demographics have also changed, where now you had a county which in 1970, which is essentially 90% white, which is in 2019 now a little majority minority, which has been a culture shock for a lot of people.
We're talking about transportation and equity with King Williams, the director of The Atlanta Way, a documentary about gentrification. And I want to bring in a second voice now. Shinpei Tsai is the executive director of the Gale Institute and a member of the New York City Public Design Commission. Shinpei, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, nice to be here.
So we're talking about Atlanta, but there are issues about public transportation around the country. And a lot of this has to do with race, as we just heard King break down. Can you give us a sense of other states that are dealing with similar issues?
Well, there's been quite a few ballot measures that have passed across the country in the 2016 election. And metro regions, as they've been growing, as their population has been growing and the economy has been growing, are finding that they need to find ways to fund a better transportation system overall. But how that actually plays out speaks to some of the dynamics that King mentioned, which are, you know, maybe not really knowing just yet how to take better care of low income and communities of color, how to account for the lack of privilege for many of those riders. And so there's been a lot of work by coalition groups to think about the different ways that the transportation dollars can be better directed.
I want to put a sharp point on this because I feel like sometimes we talk around the issue, and King sort of brought this up a little bit, but how is this country's infrastructure built in terms of who it wanted to isolate and who it wanted to segregate? What happened? How did our nation's infrastructure segregate communities of color?
After World War II, there was an idea that we needed to find a way to cross the country in case there was ever an attack. So in the 1950s, there was the Interstate Highway Bill that was created, and there was a desire to be able to bring troops from sea to sea, coast to coast. The federal bill distributed funding to the states. The states then decided where the interstate should go, and they reflected the biases, honestly, of the time, which was to choose neighborhoods over others in terms of where they should be built, and they fell along lines of low income and usually communities of color.
I'm recalling another documentary called Free to Ride about a similar issue in Ohio and how difficult it was for one community to get one bus stop set up, because that would now mean that there would be people of color going through that community on, you know, via the bus. So I want to bring you back in here, King. How do the legacies of the decisions that we're talking about linger in places like Atlanta, particularly in Gwinnett County?
For Gwinnett, it was really interesting because once the highways were built, in order to actually get to Gwinnett from Atlanta, just about every Black neighborhood was destroyed. And if it was not destroyed immediately, just the years preceding the highway development destroyed the rest of them. And all that economic development went actually north to Gwinnett County. And so for Gwinnett, for the longest time, assumed that people who lived there, that all of their economic gains was based on their own and not necessarily correlating that this highway development destroyed the city on purpose in order to bring you guys this economic development. And so for Gwinnett now, Gwinnett is starting to slowly realize what's been happening the last few decades. And a lot of people are still in denial about how much that's affected the growth of the region and the city.
Shinpei, what type of impact does this have on low-income communities, communities of color, or any community, really? Because when you think about it, I'm sure there are people who might say, well, get a car.
Absolutely. Across the country, there's a greater proportion of people in low income using public transit. They can't really afford a car. If they have a car, they can't afford to carry the cost constantly, so they might go in and out of car ownership. So having some other system is really fundamental, and especially now that we're also confronted with the option of rideshare like Lyft or Uber, public transit is a reliable price. And it doesn't experience price surging like those other services do.
Shinpei, are you seeing any positive or any examples of cities or states doing a better job to try and get close some of the gaps here?
I think actually as a result of some of the organizing from the last couple of years and the opportunities presented by the ballot measures in 2016, some regions, and I would say years of organizing by local community groups, there are equity programs now adopted and mandated by local transit authorities in Seattle, in Minneapolis, in San Francisco. And they go beyond just thinking about, you know, the planning of the service per se, which is fundamental, but also dealing with equity, which is thinking about where they should site affordable housing in conjunction with transit build out. Where should they think about lower fare programs for people with lower incomes? Should they deal with fare evasion, making it less punitive for people who just might need to, you know, they just need transit. They don't have another option. That's happened in Portland. So I think people are thinking beyond and really recognizing the various ways transit touches someone's life and goes beyond transportation, but really impacts so many other aspects.
Shinpei Tsai is the executive director of the Gale Institute, and King Williams is the director of the new documentary, The Atlanta Way, and host of the podcast, The Neighborhood Watch podcast. Thanks to you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.